Good afternoon, Steve Dale with you for Mr. Rokan. I have been at this radio station for 22 years, I believe it is, maybe 23. I don't know. I lose track. Maybe in dog years, it's another number. I'm not sure. But I know that I have filled in at just about every time slot that there is at some point in time, except this one and also Morning Drive. I've never filled in for Dean on Sunday morning either, but every other slot, I think at some point in time I've been there, and I'm so excited to be right here to talk to you, and you will be a part of this program. One of the guests I have, I've been very vocal about this, and later in the show, I definitely want to know what Kevin Powell thinks about this. The National Football League said, our honorary Pro Bowl captain is going to be, at least one of the two captains, will be Michael Vick. Now, Michael Vick, several years ago, was convicted for dogfighting. Actually, he was not. He was not. He never, that's a mistake to think. He never went to jail for dogfighting. He actually went to jail for racketeering, which is a much lesser felony, though it was clear he did horrific things to dogs. Then he came back and he played football again, even though at the time Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, first said he probably will never come back to play football. The judge said, well, we'll see what happens, but I don't think so. Well, he did manage to come back. He resurrected his image, according to some, not me necessarily, but some, when he toured across the country after he got out of jail. He toured across the country with Wayne Pacelli, then CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. While more than anyone else, I think Wayne would know, or at least have an opinion, about how contrite Mr. Vick may sincerely or not be, and whether he feels he should play in the Pro Bowl game, not play in the Pro Bowl game, but be the captain, the honorary captain in the Pro Bowl game. And in fact, his playing days are long over, and that's part of the point, I think, in my opinion as well. Why put him on a pedestal? But what I'll ask Kevin Powell about is there are other players, I would assume. Other amazing players. You know, he had a great, I'm no NFL expert, I'm no football expert, but he had a really great career with Atlanta. Then he went to jail. That kind of interrupted the career. And then he came back and had one great season. But compared to other players, was he that great? Are there better examples? Not only better examples off the field, but even better examples of players that could be honorary captains. I mean, why him? We will have Wayne Pacelle on the show. He was the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, and we've got him. I'm a friend of his. We don't always agree. We may not agree. I don't know what Wayne's going to say. Also, there was the story of, and he's not done other interviews. This is a WGN exclusive. But in addition to that, you may have heard it was in the news, and I've been talking about the story about the coyotes that were confiscated for absolutely no good reason. Why would anyone have coyotes? Well, that's a long story, but she did a good thing by heroically, in my view, by saving these coyotes. Tommy Tranchita, who lives in the southwest suburbs, she did everything right for 13 years, according to the Departments of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, State Department of Agriculture. Then one day they knock at her door and they take away, with guns pointed at her, her coyotes. That's the Illinois Department of Natural Resources that did that. I want Wayne's take on all of that as well. We'll also talk about the year in politics. What a wild ride it was, right? Paul Lisnick will be here. My very old, and I do mean very old, friend from WGN Television. He'll be here to talk about, well, the highlights of the year. And also, I wonder what his grade is for Lori Lightfoot as mayor. So we'll talk to Paul. And for all of these guests, we'll take your questions as well. You may have heard that cannabis is going to be legal in, what, 2 days? What does that mean exactly? And in Colorado, I have friends in law enforcement, and in Colorado, I know their biggest concern, even those who are absolute proponents of legalized marijuana, say the problem we had that we did not foresee is the uptick in the number of auto accidents, including fatal auto accidents. So we advise other states as one by one, they pass similar laws to do something to prevent it. Well, what, if anything, is Illinois doing? We'll talk with Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly about that and about driving. So if you have no interest in cannabis at all, do you become a more defensive driver? I mean, what can you do? And if you do take cannabis, how can you do that without impairing your driving and without getting a ticket for impaired driving? And how can they test levels, which has a bit been in the news as well, because there's no way really, as I understand it, we'll find out, to test the level of cannabis. And what is that level? I don't think there's any guideline for law enforcement. So we're going to learn about that, as well as my friend, Chicago Police Department Chaplain Robert Montalongo, will be here to talk about Chicago, to talk about the fractured city that this has been. Are things better than, say, a year ago? And I also want to talk about things from the police perspective, the perspective of law enforcement. I mean, we've got a serious problem now, and that problem is that the incidence of suicide is crazy for Chicago police officers. And I think that I'll find out from him, but I actually think this is a nationwide problem. So we're going to talk about all of that, but there's much more. And I would love to have you participate. We're going to have a special guest on the show. In fact, another WGN exclusive that no other program has had. No other program. I am getting a guest that no other show on this radio station has had on. A very special guest, I think, just 5 minutes away. At least I hope he is still available. Lots of new laws go into effect in about a day. We'll talk about those laws as well. And last-minute New Year's Eve ideas, if you have any for folks, I want to hear them from you. And if you maybe have done some things last year, last minute, maybe you can offer some ideas for people too. All right, on the phone with me now, I don't know that you need an introduction. I am so grateful that you were able to take time out to talk with us, sir. How are you?
Hello, Steve.
Yes, it is Steve. Yes. Are you awake?
All right. I'm sorry. I think the connection from the North Pole is a little twitchy this year.
It apparently is twitchy. You know, everyone talks to Santa before Christmas, and me being me, I thought, well, let me talk to Santa after the holidays. I want to, first off, know how you are. You must be really tired.
Very tired. I've been resting up quite a bit. Mrs. Claus and the elves are big help in that respect.
Yes, and we are having connection issues with the North Pole there. I don't know. So are you talking to me from an igloo? Where do you talk from? Where are you on the North Pole exactly? In a palatial estate? What? Give me a feel for where you and the missus and those elves live.
Oh, it is a compound with workshops and living quarters and a lovely little cottage for myself and his.
A lovely little cottage, I see. Because you wouldn't want to be imprinting too much on the environment, I assume.
Well, yes, we do try to keep our carbon footprint down.
Now, I have some personal questions to ask you. So when you go with those reindeer and doing what you do, how do you keep the carbon footprint down? I assume the reindeer are not house trained.
Well, they actually are.
Really? And
we have certain stop-off points all around the globe for if urgent business comes up while we're out on visits.
Really? I had no idea about that. And around the globe, that must be difficult. Do you get jet lag? And maybe you could advise us, if you don't, for those who travel, what you do, Santa, so we don't get jet lagged.
Well, it certainly helps that it all takes place over a single day, so there's not really much time to get jet-lagged, but I think that most important would be just to prepare and make certain that you know what you're going to be getting into.
Uh-huh, and how do you prepare for that? Do you take drugs? Is that what you do, Santa, or do you take red wine before you go?
Oh, no, well, red wine wouldn't be a very good idea. I am driving that.
That's true. That's very true. So what do you do to prepare?
I make certain that I'm very well slept beforehand, because I'm going to be awake for quite a long time on my journey. And I make certain that I have plenty of good exercise the day before to keep my energy up. I eat very well, at least before cookies. Milk and cookies are a little bit of a treat that I offer myself in sort of a reward for the good, for being good the rest of the year.
Yeah, we don't have the best connection, Santa, so I'm going to cut it short, so to speak. But I do want to know if you have any resolutions for the new year.
Well, I want to try to up my production and make even more wonderful toys so I can make even more children happy this year.
And do you have any resolutions for any of us? I mean, for the world, for all of us. I mean, the amazing thing about what you do, Mr. Claus, if you don't mind me calling you that, is that you visit everyone. You go to South Africa, you go to Mongolia, you go to Singapore, and you go to Brazil. I mean, you are everywhere. Are people the same, ultimately, no matter where you go? Or better put, are children the same no matter where you go?
Oh, yes, indeed.
They might believe differently, they might look differently, they might act a little differently, but at the bottom of it all, we are all just people, and we're all just trying to make our way in the world. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think that would be what I would ask of the world to make for this coming year, is to look at other people and to try to empathize with them rather than just seeing them as different.
Do you think we don't have enough empathy and don't think about what we are all? And because we are, you're right. I mean, we all bleed red blood, man, you know. So we are all the same. But you think sometimes us mere human beings forget that?
It can be entirely too common for people to, yes.
To forget it. Santa, before I let you go, can you do one thing for me? I hate to ask you this, but, you know, it's a very important question, and I think that people need to hear the authenticity. So can you give one ho-ho-ho? It's contagious. Thank you very much, Mr. Santa Claus.
You're very welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to talk to, of course, Mr. Santa Claus. So what did you get for Christmas? Any unusual, really bizarre, crazy gifts? I want to hear about those. 312-981-7200. You have last-minute ideas, and this is kind of last-minute, for people to do maybe something you're going to be doing over New Year's Eve. I want to hear those, too. I think we're back. You know, I'm looking. I was distracted there, and thank you very much for the reminder. I've got Ben here telling me where to go. Well, that's not quite the best way to put it. But thank you, Ben. You know, I'm reading all these texts, and what nice comments. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, having to do with the fact that I'm here filling in for Mr. Rokan. Unusual Christmas gifts. Did you get any crazy Christmas gifts? I've got some here that people have already texted me about. One is a sweater, and I have a picture in the text. I can't show all of you this picture, unfortunately, but it is a Christmas sweater that has a head of a dinosaur, I think it is, coming out one end, and the tail of a dinosaur coming out the other end. Another is a Alice Cooper costume. Is that what this is? Why would anyone? I don't know. I just said unusual Christmas gifts, and it's up to you. This picture, you guys are so creative, or crazy, I'm not sure, is our ornaments. Someone got ornaments, and they're to be put on a beard. They actually stick on a beard, the best I can tell. That is kind of unusual, for sure. I have last-minute ideas for New Year's Eve. We printed out some of these, but I'm curious about what some of yours might be. You could skate your way through the last moments of 2019 and enjoy fireworks, as well as the Parkway Bank Park in Rosemont, courtesy of the Parkway Bank, the Second City Comedy Troupe, and its zany perspective of the holiday season, with the good, the bad, and the ugly sweater at 7 and 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve. I've got some more of these here. The DuPage Children's Museum is doing something really interesting. My wife does animal-assisted therapy with one of our dogs, and she's going in tomorrow to a children's hospital with our dog, which is just in of itself, you know, really cool, right? And they're celebrating New Year's at noon, and they're having a countdown to noon. And I guess that's an idea that is happening all over. The DuPage Children's Museum holds its 18th annual Family Fun Bubble Bash from 9 a.m. to noon, and then they are having a countdown to noon. You can grab your ice skates as Rosemont hosts its ice skating and fireworks event at 11 a.m. on Tuesday on the 31st, also Wednesday, January 1st from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. You could do whirly ball. Gosh, it's been years since I've done that. You could take a spin over to the Whirly Ball place in Vernon Hills, wherever that place is, for two New Year's Eve events. If you live in Vernon Hills, maybe you know where that place is. The family New Year's Eve party runs from 1 to 7 p.m. On New Year's Eve and features lunch, buffet dinner, laser tag, bowling, unlimited Whirly Ball for $20 for kids and $30 for adults. And this is something I would do. Brookfield Zoo welcomes 2020 with a zoo Year's Eve celebration from 6 to 8 p.m. That's all. And their countdown is until their countdown to midnight is really a countdown to 8 p.m. apparently. You don't want to keep the animals up late at night. That wouldn't be the right thing to do. The Lincoln Park Zoo is also, I happen to know, celebrating New Year's Eve with a very special event as well. Illinois has passed a wide assortment, and I do mean a really wide assortment of new laws that many of them may affect you. Some of them may not, but many of them may affect you. I'm going to go through what some of those laws are. We will do that when we come back. And also after the news, I want to hear again from you. Some last-minute ideas for New Year's Eve. Do you have some fun, crazy ideas? You're beginning to text me with some of those. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Steve Dale here for Mr. Rokan on WGN. Try to catch up with some of the text here. One is, I won't say it, are you? I can answer that. I've been here at WGN for over 20 years. I typically do the pet show, but yeah, that's right, a pet show. I'm a certified animal behavior consultant, but began in radio 4,000 years ago. At one point in time, I actually played music on the radio, if you go back far enough. So I'm a radio guy, and I love doing general radio. My name is Steve Dale, and that ties into the next question. When does Bob Surratt start in the mornings? He starts in the mornings on this coming Monday. And, you know, those of us who have been around town for a while, some of us, it's a mistake to think that some of you think that everyone in the media knows everyone else. Well, that's going a bit too far. But if you're around a while, you have the opportunity to work with and meet people. And I was an intern when I was in college. I don't know, how old are you then? 18, 19? I don't know. Somewhere in there when Bob Surratt was on the radio at another radio station in town. He was playing music on the radio. I was an intern. That's how I first met him. And then several years later, I became a restaurant reviewer. Believe it or not, that's right. I got paid to eat. I was a restaurant reviewer for Crane Chicago Business, and I did some restaurant reviews for the Chicago Tribune. And I had this idea that I could do reviews on television on the noon show at that time for Channel 5. And I contacted Surratt because I knew him, and he said, yeah, I'll see what I can do. He did. Who does that in this business? He actually went out of his way to do me a favor. He introduced me to the news director. And I don't know, for 6 months, I did restaurant reviews until they changed formats of the news show, which happens in this business also, right? That would not have happened if it wasn't for Bob Surratt. So I look forward to once again, and I've been at WGN forever, right? So Bob Surratt was here. He's coming back here. And personally, I'm excited about that, but I wanted to answer your question about it. Unusual holiday gifts, unusual Christmas gifts, 312-981-7200. There are some I have here. The problem is when texts come in, then they roll and roll and roll, and it's hard to read the previous text. So I want to go back to the person who said, I got a piece of wood from my ex-wife. I don't know what that means. Let's see. When I was younger, I thought fudge and brownies were the same thing. Are they different? You know, some of the text you get, I just can't explain. You're doing great, Steve. Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate all the kind comments about Santa Claus. Yes, you are right. Santa Claus does need a new telephone, I think. New laws. Lots of new Illinois laws. I'm going to go through just a few of what they, just a few of them, and many of them will affect you, you know, as long as you live in this state, and we have listeners from all over the country, but if you live in this state, they absolutely are going to affect you. By the way, at 4 o'clock, we have Robert Montelongo on the show. He is a chaplain for the Chicago Police Department, and there's a lot to talk about. You know, Chicago's been very divisive. It's been a tale of two cities in some ways, and I think... In fact, the chaplain has told me that previously in his own words. And I know Ro Khan, who I'm filling in for, which in of itself is great, because I have ginormous respect for Ro. And one of the reasons for that is his commitment, as I do have myself a commitment, for law enforcement when they do the right thing, which is almost always. I mean, when you need someone, really, obviously you call the police department. That's who comes to save the day. So when you need them, they're there for you. And there's a lot to talk about, including the increased suicide rate and the violence in Chicago. Is it overstated, perhaps? Okay, so new Illinois laws. For the first time in nearly a decade, Illinois is raising its minimum wage. It increases from $8.25 to $9.25 on January 1st, and by $15 will be the new minimum wage in 2025. On January 1, adults will be able to buy cannabis legally from hopefully what will be a well-regulated marketplace, and we'll talk about that later in the show as well. Your jeans, not your blue jeans, your jeans inside you, they're your business. Companies like Ancestry.com and 23andMe won't be able to share your Ancestry test results with health or life insurance companies without consent. That is actually also a new law. Starting January 1, the law says that all tips must go to the employer, to the employee, not their employer. So what would be an example of that? Like if you go get a haircut, then the person who owns the shop you might give the tip to? Instead, you should give the tip, I suppose, to the person who cuts your hair. Is that what they mean by that? I don't know. Starting January 1st, you'll pay more for reckless driving. The maximum penalty for hitting construction workers increases to $25,000. The fine for illegally passing a school bus doubles. And that drivers who violate Scott's law is called maybe fined up to $10,000. Drop it and drive. Illinois residents will no longer be able to watch streaming video while driving. Who does that really? And my favorite, dog and cat kennels must be equipped with fire sprinklers, an alarm system, or a person there at all times. It's my favorite for a reason. That's actually, that law was my idea. That happened because of me. Patrick, you're on WGN. It's 3:47, hey. And hello.
How are you doing, Bob?
I'm good.
Just addressing the chip issue you're having. Basically, a lot of people don't realize that when you chip on your credit card, when you go out to dinner, say, most places do not give the server that tip at that end of the night. They hold it on till they get paychecks out, and they just put the tip on the paycheck. So what that's doing is making it so the people get tipped immediately. You know, at the end of the night, the company has to give money out of their drawer that's, you know, on the credit card, so it makes sense. But I always recommend when you go out to dinner, if you're going to pay your bill with your credit card, pay your bill with your credit card, but always tip with cash. First off, you're ensuring that your server gets the money that night. Second off, your server, if it's a common server that you see repeatedly, will remember that and will appreciate that and will take better service of you whenever you return, because they'll remember, hey, this is the guy that gives me cash instead of making me go through everybody, you know. And then it also keeps Uncle Sam's hands off the extra tips because, you know, people are getting taxed on tips, which kind of is ridiculous unless you're getting, like, a couple $1,000 in tips a week. Then I could see it, but most servers aren't making that in tips.
Well, you yourself have given us a tip, so thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. 312, thank you. 312-981-7200. You could text us. You can call us. It says here, I asked earlier about unusual Christmas gifts. My husband unwrapped a book first published in 1893 with the yellow tape and dark pages. I was concerned, it says. The book was about Jesse James, and my husband read it in 2 days. My son checked it out from the library, and it was due in 2 weeks, okay? I love antiquarian books, and what I really get the feel for is that bookstores are coming back just a little bit. I hope so. I love walking into a bookstore, and then I sniff. It's intoxicating to me, the smell of books. I really do. Isn't there a smell of... Come on. You walk into, I bet... You know what? It would be interesting. Is this politically incorrect to ask for someone who's visually impaired? And I wonder if that person walks into a bookstore that they'd know it. If they walked into certain types of stores that they would know it. Things that we don't typically pay attention to having a smell that it really does. And I really, if you blindfolded me, I would know, I think, that I happen to be in bookstore. New laws for 2020. There are pages of this stuff. I don't have time to go through all of them, but I checked off some that I thought were interesting. In 2020, Illinois high schoolers in the top 10% of their class are guaranteed acceptance to NIU, EIU, SIU, and WIU. All universities, of course, in our state. So if you're in, the way I read this, if you're in the top 10% of your class in high school as a student, you automatically get in to one of these colleges. I assume you'd have to pay whatever the going rate is, or maybe you get a scholarship if you're lucky, but you're automatically in if you're in that top 10%. I think that's a great thing because I think enrollment has been down for all of those schools. Illinois police and firefighters risk their lives, of course, to keep us safe, and that's why the burial benefit for first responders killed in the line of duty doubles on January 1st. That's a good one. Police will have access to better mental health resources in 2020 with training that focuses on wellness and suicide prevention. In fact, just after the 4 o'clock news, we'll talk a bit about that, what's going on specifically with the Chicago Police. Expressway Camera Act is new. That requires the Illinois State Police, Illinois Department of Transportation, the Illinois State Toll Highway Authority to create a program that will increase the number of cameras along expressways in Cook County. It provides images from expressway cameras to be used by any municipal police department, county sheriff's office, state police officer, or other law enforcement agency with jurisdiction over the expressway in Cook County in the investigation of any offense involving a firearm. Wasn't that already a possibility? That if there are cameras there, that you would use them, that law enforcement would use those cameras. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe that's not the case. Some text I have at 312-981-7200. I asked about New Year's and things that folks might be doing over New Year's. This one says, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to bed at 7 o'clock. 312-981-7200, as I said. Oh, this is cool. Mike in Riverside called. I asked if someone could call Mike who's visually impaired. And actually, do you know that you're walking into a bookstore? Do you know, this is an easy one, that you're walking into a deli? Do you know sometimes exactly where you're walking into based on the smell of the place, for lack of a better way of putting it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tell me about it. Where would you know? Give me some examples.
Like, I love reading as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I walk into a bookstore, you just know that you're in a bookstore, you're in a restaurant by the scent.
Right.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, especially bookstores that have, older books, antiquarian books, they just
right.
have, and I love it. I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't need cannabis to make me high. I could just walk into a bookstore. now, what
absolutely.
Are some other, obviously a restaurant you'd know, you know, but what are some other places that we might not think about that you could walk into, other places of business that you would walk into and say, you don't have to tell me. I know this is a fill in the blank. Are there any other examples?
Like, sort of like a grocery store as well, I guess.
Ah.
And like, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a certain type of store, like an antique store as well, has a certain smell.
Oh, that's right.
I believe.
Yeah, no. I antique store, I totally get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have big plans for New Year's?
Not really. How about you?
Well, we're going out. I'm going out with my wife and a couple of friends, including a brother in sound from another radio station, so I really can't talk about it, because then I'd get in big trouble. They'd have to kill me or something.
Right.
So, yeah, but I'm going to bed fairly early, because then on New Year's Day, I'm filling in right here on WGN from 9 until 11:30, filling in for John Williams.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you
cool.
so much for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a happy New Year.
You too.
5 minutes before 4 o'clock on WGN, and one of the things that we'll talk about later is cannabis and the driving with, you know, it's really been an issue, and other states have, particularly Colorado, have seen an uptick in fatal auto accidents. So how might that be prevented? I have so many texts here. I appreciate them all. I just can't keep up with them. Popcorn store. Yes. Movie theater. That would be another, right? You walk into a movie theater. Thank you for these texts. You walk into a movie theater and, man, you know that instantly, I think, you know you're in a movie theater. That's for sure. Let's see some others here that, just about me. You don't want to hear about me. Pharmacies like Walgreens or CVS. They all smell the same, according to you. Well, maybe they do. That's interesting. Steve Dale back with you at 8 minutes after 4 o'clock. I'm here for RoCon, and this is just perfect because I'm a huge supporter of the Chicago Police Department. But if there's anyone at this radio station who is more a supporter, it is Ro. And you know that, Chaplain Robert Montelongo. Welcome to WGN again. Nice to see you, and belated Merry Christmas.
Oh, belated Merry Christmas to you. Actually, we're still in the octave of Christmas, so it's still
explain
Christmas
what that
season.
Means. That's the octave, like, yeah. La, 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 la. No,
well,
no, not
so
that.
Christmas begins on Christmas Day
uh-huh.
and extends for the octave 8 days following Christmas. So we say Christmas is the first day of Christmas, and we have 8 days.
I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Hanukkah.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Do you get presents for 8 days?
That would be nice.
That would, yeah. So what does a chaplain do with the Chicago Police Department? Essentially, what's your job?
Well, my job is to help my brother and sister officers in any way I can, most especially in faith-based ways. Our chaplain's unit has many different denominations, and we're directed by Father Dan Brand, which is a great friend of RoCon.
Yeah.
We have myself. Hisni Selenica, he's our newest Muslim chaplain, Kimberly Lewis Davis, and Joe Jackson, and Rabbi Moshe Wolf. He's been with us for almost or over 30 years.
How long have you been with the department?
With the department, 22 years, and serving as a chaplain, going on my 10th year.
So what do you think the biggest changes in those however many years you just said?
22?
Yeah. And it's interesting, I've been at this radio station 22 years as well, so... We started at the same time.
Yeah. You know, it's hard for me to see any kind of negative change. So even though we do see a lot of negativity, but crime has always been crime since I came on the job and continuing up to now. What I would say a big change is the new recruits. Boy, they're so young. Yeah, I looked at them. Was I that young?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they're not as young as you're thinking,
right,
and you were
right.
just as young.
But talking about them, I see in them a lot of wanting to go out there. And as we kind of say, well, sometimes we say it's a cliche, wanting to help people, wanting to go out there and change the city, change our world. And that's exactly what they should do.
Is that the, when it comes down to it, is the job of a law enforcement officer to help? Is it kind of, in a sense, that simple?
Yeah. And most people come into the law enforcement world with a sincere heart of wanting to help people. And that's why when you talk to new recruits and you get to meet their parents and family are very afraid, because they're sending to the police department, to the city of Chicago, the most loving and caring of their children who want to go out there and help. And we know the job can be dangerous.
Is that why suicides are so high, in part? Is because you have a personality type that tends to be attracted to that profession that wants to help. And my gosh, at times it must feel like you're hitting your head against the wall. Not only from the perspective of all the bad guys that are out there, but also, okay, you've got someone, you caught him doing something that isn't good, and then you go to court, but you really don't go to court because they either plea bargain out of it, or it never even gets to court in the first place because of our court system. So it's complicated, but is it sometimes really frustrating, and so much so that maybe that's one of the reasons why we're seeing the uptick in suicides?
It's possible. And there is a lot of frustration when it comes to that. You arrest somebody and you see them out the next day. And it's the way our court system, our legal system is designed. And I think officers know that. So there might be some frustration there, but officers know that. That's our job. And it's expected that that's going to happen. And we go out there and do the job.
What's the best thing? I'm also going to ask you about the worst thing of being a police officer in Chicago.
Specifically in Chicago?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of hard because I've never been a police officer anywhere else. But I would say that even anywhere else they would agree with me is the helping people. When you do see smiles on people's faces, we'll go to many scenes. And we're there and we'll interrupt some crisis or some traumatic incident. And you look at a youngster that's part of that family or that group and you have this feeling there's no hope. Mm-hmm. But then there's times when you can help youngsters like that, and you do help somebody and you see those smiles. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the best part. That's the best part of doing the job. It's actually why we signed up for it.
Yeah. And the other side of that question?
I think the worst thing is seeing the being in those highly traumatic incidents where there's death, where there's things no one should see, and an officer has to go see it, has to put order to it, and then finally, as you will, put that scene to rest and kind of take it from there. But anything that you experience, as we all know, no matter what it is, good or bad, you keep it with you. And that's the really tough part, is those traumatic incidents, having them, you keep them with you, you take them with you.
Someone in law enforcement once told me, and it might have been you for all I know, that police officers every day see the best of the human condition and the worst of the human condition.
That's true. I believe it. And as human beings, what do we typically do is we always remember the worst more than the best.
That's true. Yeah. You know, Chicago, I think, gets a bum rap regarding crime. I want to talk to you about that. And I have some numbers to prove that, in fact, Chicago does get a bum rap. My producer said, stand by. I am standing. Can't you tell? It is 4:18 on WGN Radio. Steve Dale for Rokan, talking about one of Ro's favorite topics, one of mine also, and that is law enforcement in the Chicago Police Department specifically. Robert Montelongo is the chaplain, or a chaplain, for the Chicago Police Department. And, you know, we were talking both off the air about this, and we've talked on the air about it over the years. You know, Chicago, I think it's a really bum rap. So here I've got it. You see it, right?
I see it.
You can all see this. Papers that say, and these are official statistics, the safest city in America, according to the Safest Cities in America report from the Department of U.S. something that's blurred here, but this is from the U.S. government. The safest city in America is Columbia, Maryland. Hmm. I've heard of it. I know nothing about it. Number two, Yonkers, New York. Number three, Plano, Texas. Okay. Four is Gilbert, Arizona. Five is South Burlington, Vermont. And these are all cities of varying sizes, right? On the list, you know, it would be nice if Chicago were in that top five, right?
Yes.
But there is no major city. Let me go through this list here. There is no major city until, like, Vancouver. Is that a major? They're number 28. So they're the largest city at that. Portland, Maine is 31 on that list. I mean, there's no major city until you get to, oh, gosh, I'm going Charlotte, North Carolina is 53. That's a big city. But still not a huge metropolis. I mean, they're just, sadly, I wish they were all safer, you know. The truth is Chicago is 130, and Milwaukee's 136. Albuquerque, nice community, you'd think, right? 137. Oakland, 149. Pittsburgh's 142. Washington, D.C., 167. I mean, there are lots of Denver. Must be all that stuff they're smoking is down to 160. I don't know. Anchorage, Alaska, 172. Los Angeles, 171. Detroit, 179. And at the bottom of this list are Fort Lauderdale.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
181. And below that, St. Louis is 182. So, you know, I think that Chicago does get... I mean, again, we want Chicago to be safer. I am not suggesting things are perfect. But I don't think it's nearly what is described on the late
media.
Night. Yeah, by the late night stand-up comics and others.
Well, even just regular news. You know, sometimes we make news in Moscow, which is interesting. But you're right. 130, I'll take it. We could do better.
We need to do better.
But I'll take
it. So what could we do better? How can we help the Chicago police, because we don't live... That's the other thing. We, in my opinion, it shouldn't be only up to law enforcement to make things safer. I think that we have to work as a team to do it, the community, the public officials, and the police.
Right. I agree. And we do have a lot of programs that are there specifically for that. Our neighborhood policing program, our CAPS program, all ways of trying to get the citizenry to help us in this. It's not, like you said, it's not something for the police officers to do alone. I only have two eyes, and within the department, we only have so many eyes. But with the whole city looking out for each other, well, then we have, I don't know, how many people do we have in our city? You know, multiply that by two. We have tons of eyes that can help.
Help. So Mayor Lightfoot has talked about this. She said that more people need to step up. And in certain neighborhoods specifically, the police are still not trusted. And they need to at least develop some trust with the police, because the police can't know what they don't know. Yet, if you know something that happened, if you see something, if you hear something, if you know something happened, you need to speak up. And we're kind of not there yet.
Yeah, we've had this for so long. If you call 911 and ask for yourself to remain confidential, you will be confidential. If I requested to know who called, they're not going to tell me.
But that's actually a text here. So can I? You must be reading my text, even though you cannot see the screen. You must have X-ray eyes. Right. I don't know. But it's actually a question that was asked. Can I anonymously report something happening that I'm concerned about?
Yes, you can. And a police officer on the street might want to really bad know who called, and might just get on the air and say, who called? And the dispatcher will tell them it's anonymous. And to reverse an anonymous, I don't know what the procedure is, but I know it's like sending something through the Senate.
It's not easy.
I don't know the procedure. It's not easy. Yeah. And that would be on a very...
like high level something, right?
Right, but it is very well guarded. And you know, again, with all things that when you say it's confidential, the natural instinct of people is to think it's not, and oh, that's not true, but it is, and I can confirm that. And
they don't have to be high crimes necessarily either. So quality of life quality of life is. You know, we're talking about, and people do tend to talk on the radio and in the media about the terrible things that happen, but living in a big city, lots of things happen. You know, they're blocking my driveway. What do I do? But I don't want them to know it was me that called, because right. I'm afraid they're going to do bad things to my car. I mean, can there be little things like that that aren't so little to the person who wants to get his or her car out of the driveway?
Of course. You know, if something is wrong and you believe that it needs the police to come and help or to take action on it, call. Remain anonymous. We are a big city, and there's a lot of calls that we receive. But the calls that we can help on are truly the ones that really, you know, make our job worth it for us. We can go out there and make a difference. And what? Those little things make a difference.
What can we do, because we have 1 minute left.
Okay.
What can we do, Chaplain, to most support the police department?
One other thing that I always say people need to do is to thank their police officers. There is not a better feeling that a police officer can have than to go out on the street and have somebody tell them, thank you for what you do. I really appreciate it. You know, typically, most of us will say that to a veteran. You know, hey, thank you for
yes.
your service.
Increasingly, yeah.
And, you know, I'm a policeman on the street. Somebody tells me, thank you for what you do. And I'm like, well, you know, you kind of don't feel like you're worthy of it, but boy, it feels good. And there are people out there who do it. It's happened many times for me.
Hmm. Well, you know, I do that too. Yeah.
It feels great. You know, and
they won't look at me like I'm crazy.
No. No, well, they'll remember you.
Well, that's that. I'm worried right. about that too.
Well, but they'll remember you and be like, wow, you know. Can I say quick, when I worked in Inglewood when I first got on the job, and mm-hmm. from there I went to the targeted response unit, and it was going to high crime areas. Then I went to the bike unit in downtown, and people started waving at me and saying nice things to me, which wasn't usual, and yeah. it really made a difference. I felt good.
All right, well, say nice things to the police. Chaplain, thank you. I'm saying it now. Thank you on behalf of me. I'm sure I'm speaking for Roe, for sure. And I think I speak for most Chicagoans and most people who may not on a daily basis appreciate the police, but boy, when we need help, who are you going to call?
Right.
You know, Ghostbusters, their line is busy.
Right.
So we call you, and you're always there Thank for you. Us. So
And let them officers know how you feel.
All right. Thank you, right. Chaplain. It's been a tough year in a sense, right? Too many losses.
Yeah.
As chaplain, you deal with that,
yes.
obviously. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Okay.
Steve Dale right here on WGN for Mr. Rokan, and I have the most amazing news. This is incredible. I have not one but two tickets to see the Chicago Blackhawks against the Detroit Red Wings. The game is Sunday, January 5th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. And you can find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingAndCooling.com. That's tickets to see not only the Chicago Blackhawks, but they're playing the Red Wings. And that is always exciting. Why they split them up into different divisions, I don't know. Now you're calling in. It is not the time yet. I will tell you when it is time, but we are going to. I promise. We are going to give away these tickets. I'm very excited about that. Much earlier in the show, we were talking about, all right, you walk into a business of some kind, any kind, and you can smell that business, what that business is. And I've had several more ideas come through here, including a tire shop and also an ice cream shop. And yeah, I suppose you're right on both of those regards. 312-981-7200. That is our phone number. You could text us as well. As we talk about now, a topic that actually you have all asked me to talk about, in a sense. And also law enforcement friends of mine said, Steve, you need to bring this up. So January 1st, if I'm understanding right, and we have Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly on the phone. So, Director Kelly, thank you very much for joining us, first of all.
No problem. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and a belated Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you.
After January 1st, cannabis is legal in this state being the state of Illinois. And the law enforcement friends that I have said, and I did some research online, as you can research anything online, so I did that. And I learned that they were absolutely right. The Colorado public officials that are even supportive of cannabis, as well as law enforcement in Colorado, say that they didn't expect necessarily as many accidents as occurred after their law was passed. Now, I don't know how many years ago, 6 years ago, somewhere in there, when their law was passed statewide to legalize marijuana or cannabis in Colorado, that is what they saw, including fatal accidents. So now what they're saying and what they've said is that other states that pass this, good for you, that's fine, but you need to have some protections in place so this doesn't happen in your state. So my first question is, in Illinois, is there a plan, is there a program of prevention? You know, we have Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, right? And we have all these other programs. Is there such a thing, at least an education program, to help educate even well-meaning drivers that have taken cannabis? That's the longest question I think I've ever asked anyone.
Well, let me see if I can answer it the best I can. Bottom line is yes. There's a conservative effort to make sure that people understand what the limitations are. Now, when you talk about legalization, this is not an anything-goes type scenario. There's legalization in terms of legal activity involving cannabis in really two limited scenarios. Now, one of those scenarios is for medical purposes, and the other scenario is for adult recreational use. But even under adult recreational use, there's some obvious limitations. And luckily, in the state of Illinois, we have the benefit of seeing how some states have had some tough lessons learned, and we are taking those lessons learned and trying to adapt them here as society's views on cannabis have changed. The laws are changing with them. And as with any change that occurs in society, it's up to law enforcement and people in charge of public safety to make sure that we set some rails and some limitations on this, and are trying to protect public safety for legal conduct as much as possible. And within that, it's not just enforcement. That'll be, of course, a big part of it, and everybody wants to make sure that that law is properly enforced, and the Illinois State Police are very much committed to that. But part of making that effort successful is educating people about what the law really says, what you can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And in Illinois, residents of Illinois, they can only have 30 grams of cannabis flower, that leafy, dried leafy substance, which people commonly call weed or any other number of names, only 30 grams. And you can only have 500 milligrams of THC-infused product. That's things like food or a beverage or oil or ointment or butter or some kind of topical ointments that are not intended to be smoked but may have THC or cannabis-related products in them. And you can only have 5 grams of a cannabis concentrate. And that's a product which may be extracted through the use of solvents or other types of medicine, what's called dab or vape products. And that's for Illinois residents. And if you're an out-of-state resident, you're coming into the state, you can only have 15 grams of cannabis flower, and you can only have 250 milligrams of THC-infused product, and only 2.5 grams of a cannabis concentrate. So stricter limitations if you're not from this state.
Director, very quickly, and then I need to break for commercials. This seems, I mean, I'm trying to write down all these numbers as you're talking. I mean, how are people supposed to remember all of that?
But if you're in Illinois, 30 grams. Don't have more than 30 grams if you're an Illinois resident of the leafy substance. Now, if you go to a legal dispensary, somewhere you're buying this legally, the label should all be on there that tell what the amount is of the product that you're getting if you're buying a THC-infused product. So as someone who's out there who's a consumer who may be considering doing this, you need to be armed with information. All this stuff is available online, and I'm here trying to provide this information right now. So it's 30 grams, and if you're not from this state, it's only 15 grams.
All right. More to ask you when we come back. Good afternoon. Steve Dale here on WGN for Ro Khan. Excited to be here. It's an honor to be here. And really, based on what you've told me, I'm talking now with Illinois State Police Director Brendan Kelly about cannabis. And boy, Director Kelly, I have lots of questions here for you. One of the questions, actually, it's more of a comment in part. Stop, dude, the texter says. Stop the marijuana accident stuff. You're making that up. I don't think I'm making that up. I believe what I say is true about Colorado. And I think the Colorado, both public officials and law enforcement, don't want to see what happened there happen in other states. If I'm incorrect about that, tell me.
Well, there's lots of different data from different states that have legalized this, and it's really up to the, you know, the policymakers in Springfield and the legislature that have voted, obviously, about this already, to sift through all that. And I think there's differing opinions about what the impact is and whether the data means one thing or another. But our job right now under this circumstance is to make sure that we're educating the public and that this is done as safely as possible here in the state. And that's why we need to make sure people know that this is not an anything goes type of scenario. There are limitations. The law has to be enforced. And really, in the end, it comes down to common sense. I mean, you can talk until you're blue in the face about the various nuances of the statute and what this limitation means or that amount means. But in the end, it's about common sense. And a lot, frankly, will change on January 1st in terms of enforcement. You can't be driving around in your vehicle high on cannabis. That's not safe. Just as it's not safe to drive under the influence of alcohol or opioids or fentanyl or heroin. And we're going to be enforcing that. And all local law enforcement is going to be enforcing that. And they'll be doing it professionally, and they'll be doing it smartly and with discretion. But it's still against the law to drive under the influence of cannabis. And if you're under 21, you cannot drink legally. And if you're under 21, you can't be using cannabis legally. And that will be the law of the land come January 1st as well. And people need to remember that. And if you're in a vehicle and you're transporting an amount of cannabis that has legally been purchased here in the state and it's below the legal limit, it still has to be reasonably inaccessible. And it has to be in a sealed, odor-proof, child-resistant container. And if you're an adult using cannabis, you can't be doing it around people that are under 21 years of age. Mm-hmm. So those are things that are just, again, they're common sense, and people know that that's not what you're supposed to do, and you need to observe the law. And if you observe the law, then you'll be good to go.
But there is no breathalyzer test, as I understand it, or anything like that, to determine exactly if the person has had too much. So how does law enforcement tell?
Well, the way the law was passed, there are limitations based on the amount that's in your bloodstream or in other bodily fluids, and that includes saliva. So what other states have done, and what we're implementing here in this state, and the Illinois State Police are taking the lead on this, is the purchase of procuring of equipment that are oral swabs that are as easy as using a breathalyzer, if not easier, in some circumstances that have been very effective in other states, to be able to quickly determine if someone has an amount of cannabis or even other controlled substances in their system that are above the legal limit or impacts in a way they are unable to safely operate that vehicle. So that process has been ongoing. We've been preparing for that. We're in the process of procuring that instrumentation and doing the training that's also necessary, and also using new enhanced training techniques that are something that have been used in other states and we're implementing here. Drug recognition experts whose training have increased, advanced roadside impaired driving enforcement certifications. That's where an officer on the side of the road is able to look at a variety of factors, what kind of behaviors are being exhibited, what type of physical observations they're making about someone who's driving, and being able to use that to determine probable cause to make an arrest for driving under the influence. So, but as with any new thing, we have to be smarter. We have to be on our toes, and we're trying to be prepared as possible. And there is a DUI cannabis task force, which was part of this law, that is requiring all of us in law enforcement, whether it's the state police or local police or sheriffs, as well as people on the other side of this issue, to come together to make sure that we implement these things in a way that is acceptable to the court and will hold up in court. And it's going to be an ongoing process. Look, mm-hmm. 40 years ago, there weren't any breathalyzers for alcohol. And you had a lot of drunken driving, and a lot of law enforcement efforts and a lot of education. A lot of good was done to bring that down. And I think we have an opportunity to get ahead of it here as this change takes place.
And the part about getting ahead of it is the whole point of me having you on, and I think the whole point of what
Absolutely.
You're trying to communicate. Right. Bob in Des Plaines, you're on WGN. Hi.
Yes, I just have a quick question. It's regarding possession. I understand possession, 30 grams in your car, on your person. What about, you know, I know you're not going to be going into homes, but what about in your home? Can you have more than 30 grams in your home per adult?
That's not a limitation. And the amount that you have is anywhere in the state.
Yeah,
now, if you have a medical... whether it's in your home or whether it's on the street, you still can't have of that amount. Now, if you have a medical cannabis card, you are allowed to have up to five plants. That's the law. That was the compromise that that was passed. So for those home grows, if you're holding a medical cannabis card, you're limited to five plants over, that are 5 inches tall. So that's the law there. But you still can't have an amount, which is illegal.
Can I ask you a completely different question? By the way, thank you very much, Bob. And that completely different question, and then we'll get to more cannabis questions as well. You may have noticed New Year's Eve is right around the corner. And every year, despite all the public education, all that we do, I suppose the magic words, Director, that fall out of your mouth are public transportation, Uber, and Lyft.
Absolutely. I'm not here to endorse any particular product, but there's a lot of ways to get home safely without having to drive yourself home while you're drunk or under the influence of any type of controlled substance. So in this day and age, there's so many different options in terms of public transportation or other types of transportation that you can take advantage of through these apps that are just amazing. They're really putting a dent in the DUI defense industry, I hear, and that's probably a good thing. You're really helping a lot of people get home safely if you exercise that option. But if you're in a place that doesn't have that, then it's up to you, and it's your responsibility to make sure you have a designated driver and you get home safely and do not drive under the influence of alcohol. You're putting yourself at risk, and you're putting other people at risk, and you will encounter law enforcement if you do that, and you will be arrested and you will be prosecuted.
All right, very quickly, Rich and Joliet. Whoops. I did that wrong. Can you help me out? Rich and Joliet, you're on WGN, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to know, you know, I mean, if you can implement that for law enforcement, you know, where you could swab their mouth, why can't you do that in the workplace? Where if you smoked a joint the night before and you wake up in the morning, you feel fine. Why can't that be implemented? If you took a urinalysis test, you're going to be dirty. Why can't that work in the workplace at the same time where you swab the mouth?
Got it. Director?
Well, I'm not an employment lawyer, and I'm not here to discuss employment law. but obviously, the statute that was passed does address some of those employment situations, I think, and what employers can and can't do. And I imagine that's going to be an evolving area of the law, as it is throughout this country, as those situations arise more and more. But tell you, I'm not an expert on employment law, but I'm sure there's somebody out there who is.
All right. And your expertise has helped us today. Thank you very much. Director, so nice to meet you, and I thank you much for taking the time I'll tell you, more of these conversations, I think, that happen, the more lives that are saved. And I know that is
absolutely
what you're about.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes, sir. And thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, since we're talking with the police, or we just did, I thought we'd talk about the penalty box. Here is my question for you. It's a yes or no question. First person to get it right gets this. A pair of tickets to see the Chicago Blackhawks against the Detroit Red Wings on Sunday, January 5, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, air conditioning and plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons! You can find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com. So the question again, yes or no, can a goalie be penalized and end up in the penalty box? That's kind of a trick question the way I asked it, isn't it? So I will talk to my producer about what the right answer is. All of that, and coming up at 6:30, Paul Lisnick, political reporter for WGN Television, will be here. I really didn't mean to ask it as a trick question. I kind of did. Bob and Schomburg, though, you got it right. So can a goalie serve in the penalty box?
Bob? Yes.
Well, a goalie can be penalized, but a goalie is not going to go to the penalty box, right? Right?
Yes.
Okay. Don't screw it up, Bob. That's what you told our producer, so you had it right. Thank you very much. You're going to the Chicago Blackhawks game. That's on Sunday.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you very much. Sunday, January 5th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating. Steve Dale here for Rokan on WGN. Kevin Powell, how are you? I haven't even talked to you yet this afternoon.
I'm wonderful, Steve. Merry Christmas, belated Merry Christmas. Happy
New
Year.
Thank you. I'm a little nervous still.
About what?
I don't know. I just have not done this shift before, you know?
Oh, you're nervous about hosting the show?
Yeah,
well, you don't have to be nervous. What are you nervous about?
Well, you're there.
I'm here. Talk to me if you need to talk to someone, Steve. I'm here.
Okay.
We'll get through this together. Only two more hours.
Well, you know what? I do want to talk about one specific issue that I've been writing about on my blog, which, of course, you go to every day, stevedale.tv. And I've been writing about Michael Vick. So here's this guy that was accused, and he really did such horrific things to dogs. It was more than overseeing dog fighting. He participated and did things that I am even hesitant to talk about on the radio because they were that horrible, they were that disgusting, that any human being could do that to a living creature of any kind, let alone man's best friend. What's more, he was involved with drugs, allegedly, at the time, and he lied to federal investigators, and he did transport the dogs from state to state, and that is what eventually, through a plea bargain, that he was convicted for, that lesser felony of racketeering, as it's called. Now, years later, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says, you know what, we need a captain, two captains, but as one of the captains for the Pro Bowl at the end of January, I think that should be Michael Vick. And millions of people online in online petitions said, what? Why hold this guy up on a pedestal? And Roger Goodell responded by saying, I don't care what people say. He was maybe helped when he, after he got out of jail, which he did early, after he got out of jail, he did a sort of tour with Wayne Pacelli, who will be on the show actually in about 20 minutes, of then he was with the Humane Society of the United States, who was their CEO, and they went to underserved communities all over the country, and they talked about dogfighting, and they talked about how dogfighting is not a good thing, and you need to be humane and kind to animals. And he is now a different person. So I'm curious about what you think about it, not only from that perspective, but I'm thinking, and you're the football expert, I am not, but I'm thinking there have to be other choices. He had a great career with Atlanta before it was interrupted when he went to jail. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, as I recall, he had one good year, very good year, but one very good year. There have got to be better choices, not only from a representative of NFL standards, if you will, the kind of person that you would want as an honorary captain, but even his player stats. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a situation we see all the time, really. Right? I mean, not necessarily specifically to Michael Vick because of what he did, but if somebody commits a crime, they serve prison time, it's everybody always kind of seems to be on the fence. Well, do you forgive them? How do you approach the rest of their life, really, depending on what they had done? So in terms of, I don't know if anybody could really forgive the man, but at least give him credit for trying to make good after what he did do. I just think it's a little odd. I'm with you there. What they do now is they have four captains, like players that have retired, the legends of the game. So this year it's former Washington quarterback Dale Green, Bills defensive end Bruce Smith, and Broncos running back Terrell Davis. In a year where they're celebrating the 100th year of the NFL history and everything the league has done, they've incorporated the NFL 100 celebration into it. The Michael Vick era with Atlanta, whatever you want to call that, it wasn't exactly a great moment in the NFL's history. It just does seem a little odd, and I'm not sure why they're going with Michael Vick, but it does feel a little strange to put him on this in this spotlight with three other legends who obviously were not involved in anything like this. So it does seem a little odd to me.
What's more, why would Roger Goodell? So you're the football guy, so yeah. You're just saying, are there better choices?
Well, of course there are. I mean, like I said, they're celebrating the NFL's 100th year, and they counted down to the top 100 players. They've done all sorts of things. Yeah, of course there's. I mean, you name it. I mean, the list is endless to bring somebody else in. So I do agree a little bit where it does feel a little odd, like why Michael Vick of all the players that you could select? Because there is. I mean, I don't think this is the most thorough process to select the legends for the Pro Bowl game, but I'm sure they have some guys in mind. I'm not sure. I don't have a good answer as to why he picked Vic. But
what's more, so millions of people. Not
is it really
six.
Millions?
Yes. Yes.
Steve, is it really millions?
Yes. Yes, and me too. But yes, millions of people have signed a variety, Google that, a variety of different petitions. Not only one petition, there are many out there who have said, add it up, we're talking millions of people. And Goodell and the NFL is aware of that. And their response was something like, I'm paraphrasing now, he's rehabilitated. And essentially, it doesn't matter what the fans think.
Yeah,
to me, that's the part about being rehabilitated, I argue. But even that aside, why do they not care about what the fans think?
Yeah, totally. Look, I'm with you. I mean, to be clear about the point I was making, it does feel strange. I understand that people are going to think a certain way about Michael Vick forever, really. I have no idea why they decided to go with Michael Vick.
Well,
that seems strange.
I want to hear what you have to say about it. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And the guy that Vic toured with, if you will, that did, I don't know how many cities, but several, many cities, over the course of some time, Wayne Pacelli, who was then the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, and they went on tour. I'll tell you my perspective of that. I wasn't there. Wayne was there. So we're going to hear from him. The first interview he's done on this specific topic, but from what I recall at the time, in fact, more than what I recall at the time, I know something that hasn't been discussed about that, because I was on the board of the American Humane Association at the same time, myself, and I will tell you what has not been in public, kind of a behind the scenes as to how the HSUS had that happen in the first place. I'll tell you, I mean, Steve Dale here for Rokan on WGN. I could not possibly even read all these texts that I'm getting, and I can't find one so far that disagrees with me. That one that says that Michael Vick should be named an honorary captain. I think Wayne Pacelle feels that way. We'll find out. He is the former CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, and he'll be there here, not there. He'll be here in just a couple minutes. Steve, Pro Bowl has become a game where it's anything but Pro Bowlers. I don't think he should be the captain. He did horrible things to animals, Steve. This is a, let's see, that the average person would never, ever think of doing. That is true. Let's see what else. The whole Michael Vick story is one of many, many reasons I don't follow pro football anymore. You know, I wonder if they're going to lose viewership. I hope so. Vick is disgusting. Someone else writes that the only way to really make a difference is to make the sponsors aware of what is going on. WGN at 519, 312-981-7200. And John in Chicago, you're up first. Hi, John.
This is John. Yes. Good evening.
Mm-hmm.
You interviewed me and my wife for Chicago Pet Transport years ago, and I can't believe there's not athletes out there that have not only had pets themselves, whether it be dogs or whatever, but also worked with voluntary basis with groups that support, you know, caring for dogs, homeless dogs, all that sort of thing. That would be certainly more beneficial to the image of the NFL to get them and get those type of people in there. I mean, it's embarrassing to the NFL to have somebody like Michael Vick as a representative, whether he's improved his quality of life and, you know, behavior. It doesn't really matter. The fact is that there's people out there that have done this all along. And
well,
don't get credit for it.
I agree with you. And in fact, I have a story in front of me about Chicago Bear linebacker Khalil Mack. He donated $80,000, reportedly. Of course, he's not a retired player. He would play.
Right.
In fact, he is playing in the Pro Bowl, I believe, I think. But he donated $80,000 in his hometown of Fort Pierce, Florida, to a Walmart to pay off all these accounts that people had in the rears. But I do have a text here. I'm curious about how you'd reply. And assuming he was convicted, which he was, he paid his price. He was convicted. He's done. You can't hold it against him for his entire life. How do you feel about that?
I'm not saying you have to hold it against him. He did his time, whatever. However, he's not an example of good behavior overall. you know, that's the thing. You want an image of somebody who has done positive things and helped animals, no matter what breed or, you know, whether it's cats, dogs, whatever, not somebody that has this in their past. I think there's too many other choices to make to fill that need. And I think they just made a major mistake in selecting him.
I agree with you. Thank you very much for the call. Roger Goodell is not admitting this mistake and is apparently saying, I understand there's a reaction out there. I really don't care much what that reaction is. That is beyond me. And, you know, the sponsors need to be, I agree with the texter that says the sponsors need to be contacted about this.
Isn't he, in a sense, though, a good example for someone who's changed?
All right, so let's talk about that a little bit.
That's going to be everybody's personal opinion. I get it. Get it. I mean, he's clearly making an effort to change a person who he was.
But what? All right.
And I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't even know about this whole thing until today. So, like, I think it's really under the radar. I don't think this is a big, I don't think people are thinking about Michael Vick as a captain for the Pro Bowl, which is, I'm sure some people wouldn't even know there's captains for the Pro Bowl, and they do that with retired players.
I don't think it's under the radar.
It is, because you're in the world. I had no idea about this, and I cover sports. So, I'm not saying it's not a big deal. I'm just saying there's probably not a major backlash because people don't even know. Like, I could text my buddies right now who watch the NFL and be like, hey, how about Vic being the captain? And they'd be like, well, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Text them. I really don't, because this has actually been in the news.
I know it has, but not like on a major, I haven't seen this at all.
Well,
I haven't seen this at all. I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I mean, it's an interesting conversation for sure.
This from a neutral party in here, the newsroom, fellas. I just want to say, I also watching the games, Steve, this is the first that I'm hearing of this. And I am glad to know as well. But just from telling you from an average fan perspective, I hadn't heard it.
Well, then I am glad I'm bringing it up.
And I'm glad you are, too. And I'm not downplaying. I'm not by any means diminishing. For some people, it might be a very, very big deal. But I just think it's kind of under the radar right now. So maybe that's why you're not seeing as much backlash from sponsors or whoever. And you could also make the case, well, why would you? Why would you pull your sponsorship? I understand what he did was horrendous. And you think about it, and it makes you sick to your stomach. But then how do we approach the rehab process? I mean, is this a guy who's trying to make good and be a better guy? I haven't heard anything about him since he got out of jail. It sounded like he's been on the right path. But I understand that's going to stick with him forever, and it's horrible to think about. But I don't know. I mean, I guess it's how do you approach anybody who had to go to prison for something horrific, and then they get out, and then maybe they try to make good. It's going to be an individual basis to me on how you treat that person and how you view that person.
Well, to me, this is a little different than that. But I mean, it's one thing to forgive him if you can do that. That's fine. But it's another thing to celebrate him as an example of what the NFL is all about. To me, he is not an example of that. And strategically, when he got out of jail, here's what I didn't say earlier that I meant to, actually. I was on the board of the American Humane Association, and we were approached by Vic's people, as was the Humane Society of the United States at that time. And we were both offered the opportunity to have our CEO, quote, tour with Vic to rehabilitate his image. To me, that was the goal, so he could play football again and make a whole lot of money. Fine. He did end up playing football again, even though at some point Roger Goodell, when he actually went to jail, when he was sentenced, said he would likely never play football again. But there was a completely turnaround. That's fine. He played football again. He had a couple of good years, one good year anyway, and then eventually retired, became a Fox sportscaster. Why does he need to do this? And how does the NFL look good as a result of glorifying this guy when, as you yourself, Kevin, say, there are so many other players who not only did good throughout their careers, but maybe even had a better career and might be a better example?
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark comes down to, again, kind of repeating what I had said, it's how do you view people who have done horrendous acts, went to prison, trying to make good? I understand this is different. It's on a bigger stage. It's the NFL. You have hundreds of players you could select from. For whatever reason, maybe they're. And I'm trying to use the right words here because I know people are very passionate about this. But maybe they do want to show that this is a man who did something horrible, and now he's fighting to become a better man, and he has since he got out.
You know, Kevin and Steve, as you guys are saying this, for, you know, we none of us can have any idea as to why the NFL would make this decision. And the only thing, this is, there's no proof to this. It's just something that's occurred to me right now. You think about the big one of the biggest sports stories of the year, which was Tiger Woods coming back and the redemption of him. And it, I just wonder if there's no, if this isn't in some way an effort by the NFL to kind of have a similar story, or at least an image, because those aren't the two same things, but at least it's an image of that redemption, which people like that story.
Well, he came back and he played. Why does he need to do this? Let's get one of those calls in if we can. You're on WGN Radio, I think.
Hi.
Hello? Hi.
Yeah. I feel like Michael Vick or anyone like him should not be put in the limelight. He's got a God-given talent in football. Great, he got his old job back. He's doing well there, making millions. But I don't think he needs to be in a position for children to watch and look up to. I think the NFL can do a lot better. I think Roger Goodell made a very poor choice, knowing full well what the issue is. And if Michael Vick wants to show the world that he is indeed a changed man, awesome. Then he can open an animal refuge, a no-kill shelter. He can give his time and talents in that way. But the captain of the team to emerge here needs not to be Michael Vick. And Roger Goodell needs to pay attention to the loads and loads of petitions being circulated on the internet right now.
Yep, they're out there. They're out there, Kathy. Kathy, I've got a break for news, but we're going to hear from a guy who knows, I don't know Michael Vick, Wayne Pacelli, the former CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, does, and we're going to hear from him after the news. Thank you for calling, Kathy. Well, I'm going to read this text. Steve, it's like making R. Kelly the honorary counselor of a woman's abuse center. I love that. I love that text. Steve, you're doing a great job, but the elephant in the room is Ro Khan coming back. Yes, Ro Khan is coming back. I'm just filling in. I'm just here for a moment in time. And I just learned that after 7 o'clock, the great Steve King and Johnny Putman will be here. I'm fans. I love them. Who doesn't love Steve and Johnny? You know, I've been writing about this issue regarding Michael Vick. We just spoke about it, right? Well, I thought that I need to have a guy on, and this is the guy who knows. I mean, he was there at the time. He is the past president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, the founder now of Animal Wellness Action, and president for the Center of a Humane Economy. And I would argue that Wayne Pacelli has done more legislatively and more for protection of agriculture animals, wildlife, and companion animals, certainly than anyone I've ever known. I call him a friend. But at that time, when Michael Vick went, you know, from jail to touring, talking about dogfighting and talking about why this is not a humane thing to do, it was Wayne Pacelli of the HSUS who went on tour with Michael Vick. So, first of all, thank you very much for joining us, Wayne.
Good to be with you, Steve. Thanks for chatting about this interesting topic.
Well, it is an interesting topic. I mean, who would have thought that the NFL would voluntarily kind of dive into this? They're making their own trouble of sorts. But, you know, I guess the first question out for you is the most difficult one of all. You're the decider. Does Michael Vick be the honorary captain? He's not being, so I have lots of text saying, well, he shouldn't play in the game. No, he's retired. He's not playing. The honorary captain for the Pro Bowl. Should he? Shouldn't he?
You know, I think probably not. The NFL has never really taken animal cruelty and animal welfare issues on in a meaningful way. I mean, I think they had a great chance when Vick came out of prison. And as you said, you know, I began to travel around with Vick, and we spoke to kids in African-American communities and principally in African-American communities about the evils of dogfighting, the horrors that go on with animal cruelty in general. And I thought this would have been a great opportunity for the NFL to also embrace this idea that animal welfare matters, that animal cruelty matters, but they were pretty silent. And, you know, you and I talked about this when we discussed the idea of Mike coming on your show and talking about this. And, you know, I was a little bit undecided on the NFL. And I think, you know, if the NFL really were active on animal welfare issues and made this a concern, like it's made domestic violence a concern and other questions, then Vic presents an incredible opportunity to have a dialogue about this issue. But if they're not going to talk about that, they're just going to say, oh, we're going to really give Michael Vick notoriety and just disassociate from the animal welfare issue, then I think it's not justified.
So you were there with him. Do you think he really is rehabilitated? And before you have an opportunity to answer that question, for people who don't know, I alluded to it just a little bit earlier in the show, Wayne. Not only did he oversee a dog fighting ring, but he also participated himself. And he did so in ways and did things that I can, but I'm even hesitant to talk about on the radio. That's how horrible what he did was. I mean, I can't fathom any human being doing that to an animal. What's more, we know, and I know you know, through lots of studies that have been done, it takes a certain personality type to do these things in the first place. So for me, I don't necessarily buy his explanation at the time. Well, I was brought up that way. Well, not everyone brought up that way gets involved in dogfighting, and not everyone, if they are involved in dogfighting, maybe they're gambling, maybe they're watching, not that that's good, but they're not doing what Vic personally did, like drown dogs and set them on fire. I mean, all these things that are horrific, horrific things, and we would believe that if Vic wasn't, or I believe maybe if Vic wasn't caught, who knows, he'd be still doing it now. So that's a lot to ask all at once there.
Yeah. Well, listen, Steve, you and I agree on one thing. What he did was absolutely horrifying. It's almost unfathomable in terms of the cruelty. It's made all the worse by the fact that here's a man who was at the top of professional sports. He was an immense talent. To do something so senseless and barbaric and to jeopardize so much in terms of his career was also, I think, so perplexing to so many people. I want to just give a little background and a little context. You know, when this issue came to light, I'd been working very, very aggressively on the issue of dogfighting and cockfighting. In fact, we had a bill on George W. Bush's desk. He was president in 2007 when Vic was arrested in Virginia after his cousin, Devin Bode, was stopped and went to the house, and USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and local officials and others essentially raided the house, found dogfighting paraphernalia, found dogs, found a fighting pit in the back that was painted all black. I, like you and so many others, beat the drum to say this man must be prosecuted. No one is above the law. We don't care that he makes $15 million a year or whatever his salary was. What he did was horrific.
I'm going to stop you there. Right. Anyway, Wayne, I'm going to stop you there because there is only one thing more important than Wayne Pacelli, and that would be weather and traffic. So we are going to pause for that. And I want to hear the rest of that story. We will all hear the rest of that story. 548 on WGN. Steve Dale here for Mr. Ro Khan. What an honor to be here today. So thank you very much, WGN. Thank you very much, Ro Khan, for allowing me to do this. And I have exciting news for Wayne Pacelli, past president of the Humane Society of the United States and the founder of Animal Wellness Action and president for the Center of the Humane Economy. Wayne, the good news is that I am going to, in a little while, give away some Lou Malnati's pizza. That's good news, isn't it? Wayne? Yeah, it is. Wayne, you there?
Guess he's not a deep dish guy.
Yeah, not everybody is. It's a shocker.
Very good news.
There he is. I know. You don't like Chicago pizza, Wayne?
I love it. I'm a big New Haven pizza fan, but Chicago's pretty damn awesome.
The heck with you, New Haven. I don't even know what that is. But we're going to give away Lou Malnati's pizza after 6 o'clock. The bad news, which apparently isn't that bad for Wayne, he's not getting any. We're talking about Michael Vick, who the National Football League said, oh, we want you to be an honorary captain for the Pro Bowl. This guy, Wayne Pacelli on the phone now, toured with Michael Vick. It was an educational opportunity that the Humane Society of the United States, that's what you saw it as, I believe, to talk about dogfighting in underserved communities. And I think when we took our break, you were telling us how that all came about.
Yeah, he was arrested, rightly so. He was tried, convicted, rightly so. He went to prison. He went to Leavenworth Penitentiary in Kansas, served about 2 years. Ironically, the bill to make dogfighting a federal felony was on the desk of George W. Bush, our president at the time, when Vick was arrested. If he had been arrested 2 weeks later, he could have been tried under that felony provision. But they did try him under the felony provision of the Travel Act, and the underlying crime was for illegal transport of animals across state lines. At the end of his prison term, one of his intermediaries reached out to me in my capacity as CEO of a large national animal welfare group that said, hey, Michael Vick wants to get involved in your anti-dogfighting campaign, which was a really big, robust campaign. And Steve, my first response was, no way, never, absolutely not. This guy is poison. What he did is unforgivable.
And I want to jump. I want to jump in there. And I've mentioned this on the air before. I was at that time, and you know this, Wayne. I was on the board of the American Humane Association. We were given that same offer, and for a variety of reasons, we went with your gut and we declined. But you thought about it and thought, well, maybe this turns out to be a good idea. Correct?
Well, yes, yes. And it was tough for me to do that pivot, Steve. But I thought, you know, this case was so awful. And one of the big things that I took away from the Vick case is that people were shocked that dogfighting even occurs. I knew it, and you know it, because of your vast experience in animal welfare, that it is, you know, unnervingly common in the United States. And I thought, well, here's an opportunity for a movement that is generally a lily white movement. Having a conversation with people in the suburbs, for the most part, not having a serious conversation with young kids in urban communities who are exposed to these issues and perhaps not morally inoculated against them. And I thought, you know, Vick is going to draw a crowd. He is going to get attention. Maybe we turn his horrific acts into a teaching moment for thousands of kids. So I agreed. I went out and saw him at Leavenworth. You ask, you know, was his heart changed? Was he sincere? I never could answer that question, but I sure hoped it had been. And I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he betrayed me and if he betrayed the animals, that would be on him, not on me. And he and I traveled probably to 50 different cities. We spoke to crowded high school amphitheaters, you know, packed to the rafters. And we spoke about animal cruelty and we spoke about dogfighting to stay away from it all and to be advocates for animals. I thought that was an incredible takeaway and turning, you know, lemons into lemonade. At the same time, we were working to upgrade the legal framework against animal cruelty, and we worked to pass 40 upgrades of animal fighting statutes because of the Vick case. So I thought, hey, let's use this as an opportunity to help animals and use it as a teaching moment.
Well, I don't think it should be go unnoticed that, yes, I'm aware that laws were passed essentially because of what Michael Vick horrifically did, but also the press attention that he received while dogfighting received. And you're right. I agree that people didn't even know that this thing existed that we call dogfighting, and now they did. So that if there's good news to come out of all that, that was good news. And you were very much a part of making that happen. My question to you is when you went on, I don't know what to call it, when you went on tour with Michael Vick, do you think you achieved those goals that you just said? And did Michael Vick, I know that he didn't, you know, he said dogfighting isn't good, let's be humane to animals, but he never really, to my knowledge, discussed specifically, graphically, what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think animal cruelty can't stand the spotlight. You know, it thrives in darkness. And when we expose it and we talk about the details, and I certainly did talk about the details. I mean, I don't think Michael Vick is an outstanding communicator on animal welfare issues, right? I mean, I think he was a little bit... He was a little bit out of his element. It was awkward for him because of what he had done. You know, he spoke about it. He had the attention of the kids. They got a very clear message that animal fighting is wrong, animal cruelty is wrong. Some of these schools that, you know, never had a conversation like this, Animal Protection Club started. I think that was positive. Do we know in his heart, you know, if he really changed? Steve, I don't know. You raised questions about it. I understand your perspective. It makes perfect sense. But I'm hoping people can change, because if we treat people as static, that people who do terrible things to animals are never going to change, you know, that's trouble for us, because we're going to have to live with these people in our society. I think the conversations that we had with principals, with teachers, with students at these schools all across the country were a very, very good thing. And Vic, even as painful as we think about what he did is and was, what came out of that was tremendous awareness and action toward animals. And that's what you and I want. That's what you and I have strived our entire adult lives to achieve.
But was his motivation to resurrect his image so he can come back to the NFL, or was his motivation really just to communicate to kids? And I think the former. You tell me. You were there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd have to be, you know, just completely monstrous to go through this experience and not learn that this was the most diabolical and terrible thing he's ever done in his life. I mean, if you can't learn that lesson, you're never going to learn a lesson about anything. I hope that in his heart, he will never get near a dogfighting pit. I hope he will never do anything hostile toward an animal. I think he heard me. He heard a lot of other people say that. He heard the chorus of people, so many of whom you organized, Steve, to, you know, raise objections and rightly condemn this stuff. You know, he's not you, and he's not, you know, an animal advocate who's really practiced at talking about these things, but I sure as heck hope so. And I'll tell you that I got a lot of kudos from African-American clergymen, from business leaders, said, listen, he screwed up. We don't like dogfighting, but give the guy a second chance. Well, giving him a second chance to turn something that was terrible into something positive, and we appreciate you. And I think that was really important for our movement to show that capacity.
Absolutely true. And I want to ask you about something completely different having to do with coyotes, of all things, and something that happened right here in the Chicago area. We'll do that, Wayne, after the news. Steve Dale here for RoCon, and thank you very, very much for the kind text comments. I'm reading them all, and I do very much appreciate that. And in fact, one of the comments, or some of the comments, actually several of the comments, refer to my wife and I lost a dog this week, and quite suddenly. I'm going to be talking about that on Wednesday. I'm here for John Williams from 9 to 11:30, so I will include that part in the discussion. And my response to someone who said, and I'm sure Wayne Pacelli would be outraged by this, in response, it's only a dog. And I do have a response for that. Wayne Pacelli, former CEO of the and president of the Humane Society of the United States, is now founder of Animal Wellness Action and president for the Center for a Humane Economy. Hi, Wayne. I don't know why I'm not doing anything differently. Wayne has problems when I say hello, Wayne. Let's do it again. Hello, Wayne.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Okay. You keep disappearing on me. I'm great. And we were talking earlier about Michael Vick, but I did want to ask you something else unrelated to that. So a woman who lives on in the southwest suburbs of Chicago rescues several coyotes. They were taken to her because they were dying. And she said, well, I'll try to see them through it. And much to her own surprise, they all live. But now what do? They're imprinted on people. And there's nowhere at this point in time, none of the rehabilitation centers, none of the education centers would take the coyotes. So what does she do with four coyotes? So she says, all right, I'll do it in my own large backyard. I'll make it a coyote playground. She got all the right permits, and for 13 years, had no problems whatsoever with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the U.S. or state of Illinois Departments of Agriculture. Nothing. In fact, she was commended for what she did. She also offered community education programs, and the neighbors, in fact, liked the fact that they were there. No complaints at all. But then one day, that's a knock on the door. That's the best I can do. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources does that with guns pointed at her. They trapped the coyotes, who were crate trained like dogs might be crate trained, and because she didn't respond to a $25 license renewal that she was unaware of. $25, which of course she would have paid. They removed the coyotes in a very inhumane way. As a result, in my opinion, three of them died. It's not my opinion they died. It's my opinion as to probably why they died. It was so traumatic, and there's video of all this available. They wouldn't allow her to say, you know, just go to your crates, coyotes. No, they used a trapping method that would have been perfect for 1961, but not now. We know better now. We don't have to do these things today, but they did. Three of the coyotes die as a result. One coyote left, and they won't return the coyote to her. And I'm thinking about what you make of all this, and if there's something that you can think of that can be done, Wayne.
Well, I think she was heroic in helping these coyotes. I mean, they're not domesticated animals. We have a whole infrastructure to deal with stray animals, injured animals, for dogs and cats who need us. We've got shelters and rescue groups. But for wildlife, when they're orphaned or when they're injured, there's really not much of a safety net. We have a much thinner network of wildlife rehabilitation centers. Tommy stepped into the void and cared for these animals. And as you said, for 13 years, did so very, very well by all estimations and acted in a way that was consistent with the rules and regulations of the state and federal government. And then, as you say, really on a technical issue, they kind of use that to then overreach and overreact and physically harmed these animals in an attempt to confiscate them when they had clearly been bonded to her. I mean, over 13 years, whether you're a wild animal or a domesticated animal, you're going to connect with the person who feeds you and cares for you and looks after you.
Yeah.
I will say, Steve, that state fish and wildlife agencies have been service agencies for hunters and trappers for decades. They think in terms of populations. They don't think in terms of individual animals. To be concerned about the suffering of individual animals is really a laughable concept for a lot of these agencies. And this is a really dramatic example of those archaic attitudes applied to a painful and very real situation in the Chicago suburbs. I think it's terrible what happened.
Any way you can help, he says on the air, putting you in an unfair position. But, I mean, is there anything that you can think of that, I mean, this has been an issue in the Chicago area. It's gotten publicity, and so far nothing has happened.
Well, you've done it on your Steve Dale, you know, petworld.com blog, and the Chicago Tribune has done stories about this. There's a change.org petition.
Yeah.
You know, I urge people to go there and raise your voices. I mean, it's only pressure. Now, the problem is much of the injury has already been sustained. The manhandling of these animals contributes to three or four deaths. And the issue now is one has been moved to a sanctuary in the neighboring state of Indiana, and Illinois is not wanting to allow the caretaker of these original four coyotes to care for the one who remains. I think she should get the animal back. But, you know, it's going to be public pressure. I think what you're doing now, drawing attention to it and having others join you in, you know, creating a chorus on this issue.
Well, thank you for singing along with the chorus, and I may be talking to you more about this off the air. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, Wayne. We haven't talked in a while. I wish you and your family a safe and healthy new year.
Same to you. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. Well, I've got the most exciting news ever. I have, after 6:30, pizza from Lou Malnati's for you to have. I will have a question about our next guest, Paul Lisnick. I'm trying to think of a really good question. Well, so what I would ask would be like, can I say this on the radio? Someone's social security number? What do you think his social security number? But that's an easy one, because we all know his social security number is 1. That's how old Paul Lisnick is. Illinois laws. Lots of new laws. I was talking much earlier in the show about some of them, and I will continue rattling off some of these. They're interesting, and some of them you may need or want to know about. Reporting of child abuse or neglect in hospitals requires the Department of Children and Family Services to notify the Illinois Department of Public Health and the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services of all reports involving children alleged to have been abused or neglected while hospitalized. I would think that would have been the case. I know in veterinary medicine, actually, if a veterinarian thinks that maybe that an animal was abused, because we know that when there's animal abuse, there's probably domestic violence going on, and probably if there's kids in the home, child abuse as well, that then the veterinarian at least is supposed to report to the Department of Children and Family Services. Native prairie and forage preference provides that every state agency from here on in Illinois is charged with planting. All those agencies that plant anything, they shall be, now on, they need to give preference to using native prairie and forage plants to benefit pollinators, included but not limited to honeybees and monarch butterflies. And actually, we have a shortage. It's a crazy thing. We have a shortage of honeybees, not only in Illinois, but around the country, and monarch butterflies. The monarch butterfly part is sad. The honeybee part is tragic, because that actually includes all of us at some point, because they are the most noted pollinators on the planet. Cloud computing, as of January 1st, expands the definition of computer in the criminal code to include information or data stored or hosted on a cloud-based network. So if someone steals from the cloud, they are now involved in a crime, which apparently previously was not the case. Here's a fascinating one. Maternal blood pressure equipment requires every hospital to ensure that it has the proper instruments available for taking a pregnant woman's blood pressure. It's like, what? I read this like 4 times. I mean, what hospital now would not have proper equipment for taking blood pressure of anyone? I don't even comprehend that. Youth Homelessness Prevention Subcommittee creating a... And there really is a problem with youth homelessness. That much I know. I mean, it's not talked about often, but it really is a problem. So now there will be a subcommittee in the governor's cabinet on children and youth. I'm not sure what that means or how that will help. Hopefully it will. Parkinson's Disease Awareness and Education Act creates Parkinson's Disease Public Awareness and Education, and provides that there will now be an Illinois Department of Public Health director having to do with public awareness for Parkinson's disease, which is a great thing. Here's something that, again, I had to read this like 5 times. The University of Chicago Liquor Act creates a carve-out from a local liquor prohibition referendum for private institutions of higher learning on the block of where the University of Chicago is located. That's crazy. I know that wasn't Evanston around Northwestern University dry forever and ever? Gender-neutral bathrooms states that a single occupancy bathroom for public accommodations and public buildings now will need a sign that says restroom, but not indicate a gender for that restroom. Construction zone penalty increases the fine from $10,000 to more than twice that, $25,000, for failing to reduce speeds or to make a lane change without indicating when approaching a construction zone. Here's one that maybe you can explain to me. Zipper merge method. That's exactly what it says. Zipper merge method requires the Secretary of State to include in the Rules of the Road Guide information on teaching drivers to use the zipper merge method. Now, do you have any idea what that is? The zipper merge method? I mean, I've been driving for a few years. Kevin, do you have any idea? Have you heard that?
If I had to guess, I would say if it was two lanes merging into one, the whole zipper concept would be the left lane, and then the right lane goes, and then the left. You know what I mean? Because I've been in a situation where you're driving on two lanes, and then all of a sudden it starts narrowing down to one. So if the car, if both lanes are pretty full, it should go a car from the right lane kind of eases in, then the left lane, then the right lane, then the left. That would be my guess. I could be wrong.
No, I'll assume you're right.
Because I've been in situations where a guy goes, and then it's like, well, it's obviously my turn, but then the guy in the right lane sped up and cut me off. So they had two go before I went.
Kevin?
That's breaking the zipper merge rule, and I was not happy about it, Steve. I let him hear about it.
Well, smarter than me and smarter than you are our listeners who say that you're right.
Oh, okay. Good guess then.
Yeah, yeah. You did very well. What have you ever been beside a car that you cannot see inside the car at all because the windows are so tinted?
You see inside the car next to you?
Yeah, you don't know who's driving. You don't even know. What?
Yeah,
what?
Because they have a tinted
right,
windows. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, I thought that was already against the law, but according to this... it is now against the law in Illinois to have smoked or tinted window lens covers on your windows, which...
Really?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people heard that are going to... Uh-oh.
I don't know. Maybe they're grandfathered in if they already have it. One more. Chinese herbology, which I know you're into, provides that no person licensed under this act may hold himself or herself as being trained in Chinese herbology without meeting certification standards that are out there. You knew that, right?
Back to school for me, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
WGN. Hey, it's Bob Surratt. Once again, I get up early. Let's start the Chicagoland Day together every weekday morning, 5 to 9.
Habitat for Humanity's vision is a world where everyone has a decent place to live. The data is clear. Children and parents who grow up in secure and safe housing will be healthier, excel in school or work, and suffer less stress. You can help make the dream of home ownership a reality by volunteering or donating to Habitat. Visit ChicagolandHabitat.org today to find your local Habitat for Humanity.
I've got the right question to ask for Lou Malnati's Pizza. Paul Lesnick is, and he reminds me of this all the time. Paul has written, I think, 7,000 books. I mean, I've written books. I have. I've authored many books, but not nearly, or contributed, really. I've authored a handful, but I've contributed to many, many books, including chapters and veterinary books, but Paul doesn't care about any of that. He just counts how many books he's authored, and he reminds me of that all the time. He has a new book out. Does anyone know... the name? No one's going to get a pizza. This is impossible, but I'm going to try it. Does anyone know the name of his most recent book of the 7,000 zillion books that Paul Lesnick has written? His most recent book. If you do, you get a Lou Malnati's Pizza certificate. 312-981-7200. You need to call in for that. You cannot text in if you happen to know the name of Paul from WGN Television, his most recent book. I will be here on WGN on, not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow, which happens to be New Year's Day. And we're going to be talking about a lot of different topics, including travel. Where are the hot places to go on a cruise? And the cruise line industry, if you haven't been, I'm not a fan of cruises. And I was talking to Nancy Kelly about this at Kelly Cruises. I said, I'm honest with you, it's not something I do very much of, but I understand this and this and this. She said, yeah, and this and this and this and this. This is really the trend that's happening. Do you know there are people that can now, they do this. They take cruises around the world. Do you know anyone who's done that? Anyway, we're going to be talking about that on, let's see, today is Monday, Tuesday, so Wednesday, right? On the 1st, on January 1st, as I am honored to be here for John Williams on WGN, we're also going to be talking about, among other things, about my dog, who suddenly passed away. And some of the response that I received was somewhat surprising, including a response that said, well, it's only a dog. What about that? I have a response, and you'll hear that on the first. Steve Dale here for Rokan on WGN. It is 6:39, and I had to wait a long time for this. This is toward the end of the show, but it's the moment you have all been waiting for. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dogs and cats, it is Doctor. You are a doctor.
I am.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Paul Lisnick is here.
I had to do the end of the show because I think you're buying me dinner.
What? I didn't know that. I had no idea about that.
My world's oldest friend. By the way, I have to tell you, I've been listening to you today as I always. Yeah. I know. Well, you and I heard your interview with Santa Claus earlier, which you did. People missed it. You actually interviewed Santa Claus.
Yeah.
But I thought, given your age, that the old father time would have been on your agenda.
Let me explain that we grew up together, Paul and I.
We didn't necessarily grow up.
No, that's true. And I had a babysitter that worked well. You know, that was you. So, Paul, I asked, you were wandering the halls or something when I did this. But I asked, I said, if you know the name of Paul's most recent book, of his 7,000 books that he's authored, I did say that, the most recent book is what? And I thought, oh, gosh, no one is going to get this question right. I mean, but actually, it turns out you have a fan, Mark in Downers Grove. Hi, Mark.
Wow.
Hey, hi, guys. How you doing? Happy New Year to both of you.
I'm doing okay, considering who's in the studio here.
Wow, Mark, thank you. You knew the name of the book.
Yes, absolutely. It's Assume Guilt. It's another Matt Barlow group of great activities here, and I really enjoy the book, Paul. Thank you so much for writing. And I'm a financial crime investigator myself, so I get engaged with a lot of different things throughout the great Chicagoland area. And by the way, Steve, I want to, my condolences to you and your family regarding your little guy, your puppy.
Absolutely.
We recently lost ours, and I really commend you for your prevention for animal cruelty. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for being Paul Lisnick's fan.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I gave a copy of the book to the governor last week. I interviewed him. And I gave it to him, thinking about what this is about, as Mark knows, which is, I said, look, governor, this is about Illinois corrupt politicians and a governor who might have committed murder. I said, but I promise I finished it just before you took office. And
did he laugh?
Well, he did. He kind of said, oh, it's about Blago. He was kidding. He was kidding. It was funny.
It was. And better for you, you get, not you, Paul, but Mark does, Lou Malnati Pizza, a gift certificate from Lou Malnati's, the home of Chicago's deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus locations online at loumalnati's.com. Hold on. I want to make sure we've got your address and all that information. Hold on, Mark.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Sounds like Mark got my dinner I was getting after the show.
Well, you're not getting dinner from me. I can tell you that. So I guess I begin here, political guru for Channel 9 television. Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah.
Mayor of Chicago. That was kind of a surprise, or maybe you weren't. I don't know.
No, I was surprised. It's very easy to Monday morning quarterback and say I saw it coming, but I didn't. What I did have were a lot of aldermen and other people, politicos, telling me, keep an eye on her. This was way back when there were, 15, 16 candidates going for it, and she was polling at about 2% in the polls. One of them was Alderman Scott Wagaspak, who was on the show and said, keep an eye on her. And of course, she came through big time, winning all 50 wards, 75% of the vote. And it struck me, either she was going to be a one-term mayor pulling off a surprise, or maybe a mayor for life. She has shown herself to be in the category of potentially mayor for life if she wants it,
because
she got that city council under control, equal to Rahm. Rahm had it under control more than Mayor Daley did, but she's equal to Rahm, probably stronger than Rahm. Alderman Brian Hopkins of the Second Ward said that as well on my show. What about
the outlier aldermen? So there's a couple of aldermen. Burke is still an alderman.
Haven't heard a word from him since the very first city council meeting when let's be honest, she put him in his place, so to speak. We never heard from him again.
Or Lopez, who's Burke's sidecar buddy.
So Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward, who you know as well, of course. And he will be a loyal opposition, but I don't think, with all due respect to Alderman Lopez, I mean, I think having Burke as a loyal opposition may be a little bit different than having some other aldermen as your loyal opposition. But look, even in the recent vote of the last city council meeting, when it was, will we postpone, marijuana being sold in the city until July 1st, Alderman Jason Urban pushing that. And man, she got the votes big time. City council standing behind her. Strong mayor right now.
Mm-hmm. So how strong is she? I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the year 2020 and some of the things she had to do to balance the budget, or did she really? And I want to know what grade you give Lori Lightfoot. You know, they're in the radio Hall of Fame here, the WGN Hall of Fame, and I don't know if I could say this quite this, but really, I grew up listening to Steve King. And every time, and I've been on their show many times over the years, Paul, I like pinch myself every time because they are radio royalty.
Yeah, well, I met them on the way in, and they were there, and it's just Steve and Johnny, and it's just sort of a magical thing to go, there they are. They're actually there.
Yeah, yeah, and they're the nicest people on earth, and they will be here after 7 o'clock. They're just like off the air. They're just like they are right. on the air.
They also look at you and can't believe you're here.
That's true.
After all these years.
He's still here?
Is he standing there?
I know.
Is this Weekend with Bernie?
Is he standing? That in of itself. I am standing. So here's a question for you I was going to ask you,
yes,
and I am now asking you.
Okay.
So Lori Lightfoot, she made some changes that we're all going to pay for, at least some of us are going to pay for. She didn't hike property taxes, but she found her way around that,
well,
and we're going to be paying more for other things, or not.
Well, your property taxes are going to go up. She did, and it's easy to explain. This is nothing she did that was inappropriate. I mean, she talked about the $18 million tax increase that we're getting for libraries to be open on Sundays. That's not a lot of money. And then I think most people in the city sort of like the idea, like the concept of that going on. But that
I don't know about that. Most people don't go to libraries.
Well, I mean, they should. I mean,
yes,
that's right.
I agree.
I do a lot of segments on, you probably have too, but the library, it's not your parents' library anymore, right?
It's
true. It's not card catalogs and checking books out. But actually the tax increase is really closer to, I think it's closer to like $60 million. And that's because she inherited about $40 million or so, rounding numbers off, to taxes that were passed under the Emanuel administration. So she's not owning that because she didn't do it.
Right.
She also, but basically, so let's assume we all accept that that's not a big tax increase. But there were a lot of promises, a lot of, assumptions in her budget that didn't come through. She went down to Springfield, spent a day there, and she expected them to help out in the pension crisis, expected them to help out in the lottery, casino numbers, and they didn't do it. And essentially, some of the legislators went to her and said, Mayor, welcome to Springfield for your very first visit. It doesn't work this way.
Yeah.
You don't get to come down on one day and just, you know, even though you've got this kind of halo around you right now, make it all happen. Now, I did interview Governor Pritzker last week. I asked him about that question. He reassured me that he basically thinks, yes, we will work out the Chicago situation. If she doesn't work it out with Springfield, your taxes are going up again. They have to. But the governor seemed to be positive that they will figure something out.
Well, but other things are going up. Try taking an Uber now.
Yeah, no, well, there's
after,
no question.
After January 1st.
A lot of people, not just Uber, any of the ride shares.
Lyft is the other.
But it's also, it has to do with where you're getting on, where you're getting off. It's about city congestion. If you do ride with other people, the rate actually goes down. I mean, it's not as simple as just to say everybody's paying more in a ride share, because that's not necessarily true. It will be true if you're taking your own car into the city or out of the city during, I think it's what, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. And there are other ways in which she, over there, increase things as well. And I'm not saying she didn't need to do that. I'm just saying she did. So,
well, she had an $835 million deficit that she had to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And for
but
doing
did it. Did she really? Or is this magic numbers?
No. Well, some would argue that what she did might be a little bit magic because, you know, what's a balanced budget anyway, right? There are some who claim that they never exist. But look, when we heard $835 million as the deficit, there were many people who thought, you just can't get out of this. I mean, I guess on my show, you can't get out of this without raising property taxes significantly. So to her credit, she did. Now, will the chickens come home to roost? We'll see. They're certainly going to come home, by the way, after that, because the pension issue continues to grow. Payments have to go. So we're not out of the woods by any means, and she knows that. Once again, she, you know, as long as her ideas are good and she's involving people in them and involving aldermen and trying to not, you know, have anybody, you know, too many people be angry over it, she's on the road really towards success. We'll see.
Even after the school thing, the strike.
Well, that's a great question, too, because, of course, it was a very long strike. But, you know, did she get hurt by it?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Well, I raised it rhetorical. That was a rhetorical question.
A what?
The answer is, oh, that's right. I forgot. I've got to talk.
I don't know those words.
I've got to be at a different level. It's a question she didn't really mean, Stephen.
really?
So a sense or that I didn't mean. The bottom line is that, you know what? I don't really think it hurt her. Yes, there's a contract there, $500 million. That's got to get paid for somewhere. But the you know, kids are back in school. It got resolved. They're making up half the days. I just feel right now she continues to be in a honeymoon period. We'll see how long that lasts. But I don't see any groundswell of you know, anger or anything going on. Yes, she's got some loyal opposition, but the city, I think, basically stands behind her right now. We'll see as 2020 goes on if it stays the same.
All right. So your grade.
For her, I'm going to give her kind of a BB plus because I think there's
a what
a BB are you plus. Stuttering? Didn't what, we get what, to do?
What is a BB plus?
BB plus. Aunt B, you remember Andy Griffith the show?
Yes.
Yeah,
loved her.
And I do that because look, she's got some tough times ahead. I think part of that grade is influencing some stuff that still is yet to come. But I have faith that I think she'll kind of work things through in a satisfactory way for the city. I could be wrong, and we're going to find out. In short order.
I don't think you're ever wrong. Of course not.
Not that we ever did, right?
No. So for 2020,
yeah.
What would be her goal or goals? Certainly lowering crime has been an issue. So one could say she's on the right road to do that.
And she's got to pick a very good superintendent who will step in a permanent way for Eddie Johnson. We have an interim right now.
Do you think this person will come from the ranks?
You know, it's a good question. Obviously, the union always wants them to come from the ranks. She has no relationship with the union.
Well,
that's right. And she already just brought somebody in from Los Angeles to step. But you remember Jody Weiss in the past, prior people. So, I think what she's after is probably my best guess is she's going to find who she believes is the best person for the job. If they come in from the ranks, great. If they're from outside, then that's the way it's going to be. She seems to make the point. She did it with the budget. Like, if this costs me my job, then so be it. That was literally what she said. She plans to do what's right. You got to remember, she was a partner in a law firm. And having been in a law firm myself, I can tell you that's a tough character, tough as nails to be. And she was a top lawyer at Mayor Brown. So, I mean, she understands the pressure. She understands the politics of it all. And I think she's going to play it strongly.
Our newsroom actually has a question for you, Mr. Lisnick.
Hey, Paul. David Jennings here.
Hi, David.
Are you surprised that it was Fred Waller and not Charlie Beck who stood up today as the front person in making the announcement about the city CPD's New Year's Eve plans?
Good question.
It is a really good question, and I don't know why Charlie Beck didn't do it. But then again, the information is out there. You have to think about it only becomes really important depending on what happens over the New Year's holiday. So if we get through the New Year's holiday in a relatively unscathed way, nothing's going to matter. If we do experience some level of violence in the city that's uncomfortable for us, then there will be people called on the carpet, and Charlie Beck's going to be one of them. So why that was done, I guarantee you there was probably some strategic reason to it, but at this moment in time I couldn't tell you what it is. I probably would be able to tell you better after the holiday is over and we see what happens.
So Rahm Emanuel was a consummate politician in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was very strategic.
Where'd he ever go? Where's he going?
Who? Forgot his name already.
What?
But whether to get a glass of water or from that hallway or that hallway was strategic probably. Is she, Lori Lightfoot, as strategic?
I think she is strategic, but she is also she's also new to the political game. The Springfield example I gave before, I think it's just a perfect example. You know, she understands that the gravitas she's got behind her, so she probably on some level naively thought she could go down to Springfield and make the magic happen. And I will tell you, where she goes, people are lined up to take their pictures. They want to meet this mayor. So she's got that going for her, but she also learned, I think, the hard way to say, you know what, there's more to the politics. And I believe in my interview with the governor, he sort of made a comment along those lines. I'm not quoting him, but to the extent of saying, you know, she was sort of new to the Springfield game. She needs some time to see how that all plays out.
Mm-hmm. And she didn't do very well when she went down to Springfield, as we spoke about,
right.
But with her own.
There's a Springfield, but look, there's a spring session around the corner.
Yeah.
So she still has time to try and make things work. And I'm sure that during these, off weeks and a couple of months before Springfield gets back into action, she's certainly doing her share of meetings and discussions ahead of time, learning more about how Springfield works.
Okay, we have 20 seconds. Oh. A resolution. I know, it goes by fast.
Yeah.
A resolution for the city of Chicago. What would that be?
I think you said it before. I think it's about violence. I think getting, the budget is critical. It's critical to Tony Preckwinkle at the county and Lori Lightfoot. It's critical to everybody. But I think getting violence under control in the city, because I think it impacts. We have to have tourism increase. We want people to stop leaving the city. It all works together. Let's get a handle on the violence.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in fact, numbers just came out today.
Yeah.
You might not have heard. The population in Illinois declined again.
I did hear that. That's not an area we care to lead in. So that's unfortunate. But Happy New Year, my dear friend.
Thank you very much. We can see you on WGN Television, or we can see you signing copies of your book on any CTA bus.
That's right. Assume Guilt, available on any street corner you happen to see me passing. I have my podcast on WGN Plus called Behind the Curtain, where I get to play in the theater world some, too. That's sort of fun.
You're the best at it. Thank you very
Steven.
Much. Paul Lisnick, there he goes. Bye.